Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surfed 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm Pretty Sure I Can Fly, Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational, hold my beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus. Well, one of my personal favorites, Dave Rubin, is on next. One-on-one really gets into some really interesting points, so I would ask that you share it with someone who may not know him, because he really does bring some really interesting insights. First, I'll tell you about JB Weld, DIY projects to get through, want to save money, want to avoid paying the repairman, big or small repairs, home or garage, ordinary household glue. Well, it's got the word ordinary in it. You don't want that. You need stronger. You need better. You need JB Weld. We're proud to have JB Weld as a sponsor. They're great. I know the owner personally. Hung out with these guys when I was out in SEMA a couple of years back. They've been around for 50 years. Keep JB Weld in your toolbox, kitchen drawer, craft room. For metal, wood, plastic, or more, don't glue it. JB Weld It, available at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Walmart, Amazon's, Michael, and I should say Amazon, Michael's, and more. Again, don't glue it, JB Weld It.
The Adam Carolla Show presents Dave Rubin's Birthday Cocktail Party for June 26th. Let's see who's here. Elvis Presley's manager, Colonel Tom Parker. American Mafia Don, Paul Castellano. First he gets you used to the money, then he'll make you swallow. Robert Davi. From The Clash, Mick Jones. The Warrior, Patti Smith. From the band Berlin, here to take your breath away, Terry Nunn. Shannon Sharp. Filmmaker Paul Thomas Anderson. From Parks and Recreation, Nick Offerman. Also from Parks and Recreation, Aubrey Plaza. Gretchen Wilson is here. So is Derek Jeter. Michael Vick. Sean Hayes. And Ariana Grande. That's your party, Dave Rubin. Let's get back to the Adam Carolla Show.
My party has Todd Bridges from Different Strokes. It's the biggest. He would be at the top of the marquee, and the biggest font would be Todd Bridges. Wow, what a birthday you celebrate, Dave Rubin. Good to speak to you, my friend.
Carolla, it's good to be with you. You know, if you're having a birthday party, wasn't Todd Bridges, he was a pretty big, I think, coke, maybe crack addict. You'd have a limited amount of good times with him.
Yeah, I mean, the Candyman would definitely, you know, would definitely have a supply for everybody. But still, that party is unbelievable and diverse. I often, congratulations on being you, Dave Rubin. I cite you all the time, and I always use you as a sort of an example of being intellectually honest, even if it's your, I hate this term, but your truth. Like, you examined, I remember you saying to me once when you back in the day when you worked over at the Young Turks, you just said, how could every person who disagrees with us be a racist? I mean, the odds of that are infinitesimal. And I was like, yes, he's an authentic person who's wrestling with his own thoughts and his preconceived notions, and as we all should. So I don't know. Did someone instill that in you?
Carolla, before we get to that, I thinking back on this birthday party list for a moment, it seemed like I had an awfully lot of white people on my list. Now, you mentioned only one person related to your birthday happened to be black. Is that you throwing a little something to the social justice people, trying to show them that you're cool and I'm more from the white supremacist cloth? Is that what was going on there? I just want to be clear on how we're setting this thing up.
Yeah, you know, I'm always trying to collect. I'm always trying to hammer a few of those woke points. No, Todd Bridges is the biggest name in my group. If I had a bigger name, I'd throw it out. I mean, you got Michael Vick. Michael Vick's like having three black people, just if you're counting.
It's like having eight pit bulls.
That's right.
That's how it would be. So okay, so I will answer your question, yeah. Carolla. You know, I think like most things in life, I think you're kind of wired a certain way. And then I think the world can also shape you a certain way. So if I was doing my personality test, and we've hung out enough that I think you know this about me, I'm pretty calm. It takes a lot to get me to get really fired up, really angry at something. I have righteous indignation. I want to change the world to be better. Otherwise, I wouldn't be talking for a living. You know, there's things that I deeply care about. But I'm not, my fuse isn't that short. I think that's just a hardwire thing. That's like, you know, that's the hardware part. And then the software part, I think, is the way you grow up. And I grew up in a family that it was not only totally cool to argue about things, it was basically like you were supposed to do it. So, you know, we'd sit around the table at any holiday. And I remember when I was at the kids' table, I always wanted to get to the adults' table. I remember being like 9 years old, and I wanted to be at the adults' table because I don't even know that I knew what they were talking about. But they were arguing. My aunt's arguing with my mom about this. My uncle and my other uncle are fighting with my dad about foreign policy and abortion and the whole thing. And I remember when I finally graduated one Thanksgiving to the adults' table and got in on it. And the thing is that they'd be arguing and yelling and all of that stuff. And then the second dessert was served, everybody forgot about it. Nobody held a grudge. You know, we had family fights, like everybody's family. You know, you got your aunt that's fighting with this one about some family thing, and that sticks with you. But nobody in my family ever, you know, got up from a table and said, you know, I'm out of here because of politics. And I think that's just what we need more of right now. And I think that's why, you know, you and I have become allies in this thing. It's like, or you know, you and Prager are such a great example of it. Totally different backgrounds, totally different sort of philosophical underpinnings on major questions about belief and all sorts of stuff. But it's like, you both also want to live in the same world. And I think that's what most people want. It's just that the media and now what's happened with the rabidly hysterical left is basically ruining the experiment for the rest of us. The rest of us, most people are good. Most people are decent. Most people don't need to be right all the time. Yet we've got this small, extremely loud, extremely powerful group of people that are trying to muck up the thing for everybody else.
Well, I was talking to, I think I was talking to Dr. Drew about Trader Joe's. Also, this is basically the boogeyman. And the boogeyman is talked about a lot, but can't physically hurt you. It's not actually under your bed. And you take these groups, these sort of insane hard left groups, and they're boycotting and they're threatening and they want everyone to comply. And then they say to Trader Joe's, we don't want senior taco shells anymore. We find that culturally, you know, insensitive. And we want
Trader
you to,
Jose.
Yes. We want you to change the taco shells. We want you to change the pot stickers, change all the names. And Trader Joe's goes, no, we like the names. And then the boogeyman goes, all right, we're going to move on and fuck with the next market. So all you just say is no. Like, I say horrible things. No one ever asks me to apologize because I don't apologize. So no one ever says apologize. But here's the other interesting thing about Trader Joe's. You think when you're one of these companies that just kowtows to the mob or whatever woke, whatever's going on this particular instant. You don't think there's going to be lap two for all this stuff? You don't just give in and then get your severance and go off into the sunset. Oh, no, it's quite the contrary. They find out you're weak and you're flexible, and they'll go after you again. So what I was saying is it's like a ping pong ball bingo hopper, just spinning that hopper around. Now, if you want to just cave in, if you're just one of the many companies that, you know, Goodyear tires or whatever, so you don't care. You just cave. You just cave all the time. Your ball's not coming out of that hopper. It just got picked this one time, and then you caved, and they go, okay, we'll throw you back in the hopper. There's 10 other balls in there. They'll be bouncing around, but yours are going to get pulled again. What Trader Joe's does is they pull their ball out of the hopper. They go, don't fuck with us anymore, 17-year-old idiots. We're pulling our ball out of the hopper. And you'll see, they'll get left alone. There's no round two. Nobody came. No one wanted any more pound of flesh out of them.
Well, because you're right. It's a boogeyman in that it's the Wizard of Oz.
Right.
And remember, he turned out not to be this big, scary green guy that was all-knowing and all-powerful. He turned out to be some old fraud behind a curtain. And that's all it is. I mean, Trader Jose's. So, you know, that's what they do. They do. I think Trader Ming's is their Asian food and Trader Joe's is the bigger brand. And Trader Jose's was their Mexican food. And I used to get a 6-pack of Trader Jose's knockoff. It was a knockoff of Corona beer.
Right.
And it tasted even worse than Corona. But that's what I could afford. It was like $3 for a 6-pack. And I used to drink that stuff. Fortunately, I'm doing a little better these days. But it's like, I always thought it was fun. It's just like a fun thing. And no Mexican person is offended by that. But what has happened is these leftists have decided that they will be offended for everybody. But it's not even because they're offended. What they've realized is they can use it as a cudgel to just bash people in the head into submission. And all you got to do, I know it sounds hard and you know, some people will say, well, Dave, it's easy for you because you're okay now. You got a business. You're not going to fire yourself. Or it's easy for Corolla. He's got a successful show and you've been around for a long time and you got some dough. So it's easy for us. And I understand that. And that's not totally false. But what will happen is if you're 18, 19 years old and they get you to bow once, that's the hardest you're ever going to fight them, basically, because when you're 18 and 19 years old, you don't even know what reality is. You know, it's like the world is going to get a lot harder for you in a couple of years because you're going to have a mortgage and a car payment and a wife or a husband or a kid or a dog and all sorts of stuff that's going to come your way. But once they got you once to bow for something that was not worthy of being bowed to, you will bow forever. And we've seen so many examples of this and so many people in our world that we've worked with that you try to play with it and it will destroy you. You know, one simple one, since we're doing CancelCon together tomorrow, it'll be nice to see in real life. Do you remember?
That'll be on tonight as you hear this, just to,
tonight
just to make
is, tonight,
sure.
We're right. We're in the future now.
8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, yes. And
it's
simulcast live on YouTube, Facebook, and nosafespaces.com. I'll be there. Ben Shapiro will be there. Dave Rubin will be there. And, of course, Dennis Prager. Yes, go ahead.
Well, so the guy I was going to mention directly related to it is, do you remember about 2 years ago when Mark Duplass, the Hollywood director and actor, when he sent out a tweet and in effect his tweet said, I disagree with some of the things he says, but Ben Shapiro is not a horrible person. Do you remember this story vaguely?
There are little snapshots. So the way I work is in snapshots. You know, I remember having an argument with my daughter when she was getting in the car and going to the fifth grade, and they were both getting in the car, and my daughter was saying, you know, you hurt my feelings and you need to apologize. And I said, what I said was not intended to hurt your feelings. That's how you took it. That's your problem. I'm not apologizing. And my wife looked at me and said, you can't tell her how to feel. If her feelings are hurt, then you hurt her feelings, then you apologize. And I looked at both of them. I was like, oh, this is a little moment. This is a little jump the shark societal moment where this is how I feel. And if I feel this way, I can't be wrong. And I walk through life with little snapshots, little moments of like, oh, that's a bad sign. Like I always say, when I saw the barbed wire going up around the freeway signs in L.A., I was like, that's a bad sign. We're putting barbed wire in the freeway signs. And the Mark Duplass, I gotta walk back my half-hearted compliment about Ben Shapiro so I won't be canceled and I won't be able to get my next movie into Sundance. That was a real snapshot moment for me. But go ahead.
So I think you're totally right. And most of us, that's how life works. You have those little moments where you see the world sort of forking off in one direction or another. And you can pick that moment to then apologize to your daughter. And I guess in this case, probably apologize to your wife too, or stand for what you believe. Or you could ignore the barbed wire or anything else. But so the Duplass thing, I was sort of friendly with him at the time. We were actually, we had a couple meetings about doing a Netflix show together. Mark Duplass. Yeah. Yes. So we were thinking about doing some stuff together. I have nothing against him whatsoever. However, what happened was he puts out this very milquetoast tweet about just saying Ben is a decent human being, which is obviously the truth. He gets the mob to go after him. He deletes the tweet. He issues a statement basically saying Ben is a racist and a homophobe. And since then, I don't know what's happened to him. I haven't heard from him or heard anything about him because basically he did something that he knew was true, which was Ben Shapiro's a decent human. Mob goes after him. He backtracks. He apologizes. And you're right. Talking about the lottery pinballs. Well, it's also another analogy would be now they got their foot on you and you can almost never get out of that quicksand because it's not that they have their foot on you and you're on steady ground. It's that they've got their foot on your head and you're in quicksand. And guess what? You're the one who put yourself in the quicksand.
Well, it's, you know, people need to know who are listening. I think it'd be interesting. You and I have been in this town for a while and been in this business for a while. So I think they need to know kind of the lay of the land as it pertains to pressure and then feeling the pressure of the mob and then apologizing to the mob over something you believe, which is patently true. Ben Shapiro is a very decent human being. Of course, we know him, but you don't have to know him. He's a family man. He's a religious man. He's a taxpayer. He's patriotic. He's educated. There's really, believe me, if he's a bad guy, then we're in fucking utopia because he's the least of our fucking problems. But what people don't, here's what people don't really get about our business, and it should be understood. There are people, more recently especially, who have sort of carved out their own way. They're guys like Dave Rubin and Ben Shapiro and Adam Carolla and Joe Rogan and guys like that have more recently sort of carved out their own way. There are other guys who historically, guys like Seth MacFarlane. Well, he's just a big fat ball of creativity and talent. He prints money. And if you're him or on the other side of the aisle, if you're Matt and Trey and you just print money for people and nobody else can really do what you do, they'll just look the other way. It'll be like now. Seth and Matt and Trey have very different politics, but I'm putting them in the same pool, which is nobody's going to fuck with them because they print money. You're going to pull the plug on South Park, Comedy Central, because somebody sent out a drunken tweet or something. So if you're really talented, then you kind of become like LeBron James or some athlete that is going to find a place on a roster every year, no matter what, because you make the people money, right?
Yeah.
Now, there is an in-between. The Duplass brothers. They're not Joe Rogan, and they're not Matt and Trey. They're in-between. Now, most of this town is in-between. You think there's a whole bunch of Seth MacFarlanes? There isn't. That's why he gets... I don't know if you've been to his house, but that's why he has a IMAX theater in his basement. I mean, next to the bar. Like, I'm not kidding. So my point is you're not going to cancel LeBron James. Put politics aside. You're not going to cancel LeBron James. You're not going to cancel Matt Trey. You're not going to cancel Joe Rogan for other reasons. And you're not going to cancel Seth MacFarlane. But then there's the rest of us, all the actors that are going out on auditions, playing bit roles, trying to get their pilot or stand-up special picked up by Netflix. Those people have to play the game. the Duplass brothers have gotten 12 films into Sundance. I've gotten zero films into Sundance. My average score on Rotten Tomatoes is twice what their score is. And if you think that I'm being hyperbolic, I'm not. Go, you can look it up. Look up the last five and look up mine with the people and or the critics. But now you have to go with the people. So they better play nice because they're not getting into Sundance. Sundance doesn't need the Duplass brothers. They could just go, no. And HBO doesn't need the Duplass brothers either. They can just go, no. Comedy Central needs Matt and Trey. Fox needs Seth MacFarlane. For the other 96% of people trying to work in this town, whether you're writing scripts or directing or going out on auditions or creating shows, we don't need you. So you're going to be moved by the mob. You're going to be pushed around.
Yeah. You know, that actually reminds me of something that you said last time you were on my show, which I've quoted a whole bunch. And I always quote people. I actually give them credit where credit is due. Unlike many other people in our circle don't do it. But what you said to me when we were talking about Hollywood and why conservatives are so quiet, that was sort of basically your point that all of these people, it's not like they're highly skilled. You might be a pretty good actor. You might be, but they can find someone who's pretty much the same level of actor that you are. They can find someone who pretty much is as handsome as you are or whatever else it is. So if you're not going to play by their rules, which are the woke rules of the day, well, then in effect, you won't have a career. So either you never say anything or you say exactly what you want. And that's why we can count the open conservatives of Hollywood basically on one hand. And, you know, Gary Sinise probably takes three spots in the top five. So I think you're right about that. But, you know, interestingly, on the Seth MacFarlane part, so I don't know him personally. That the IMAX theater sounds pretty freaking awesome.
It's good.
But while I agree he's cancel proof to a certain point, you know, he's a guy, and I would love to talk to him about this. So this is not me throwing the guy under the bus. But this is a guy who Family Guy, to its full credit, makes fun of everybody, right? They make fun of gays. They make fun of blacks. They make fun of Jews and Irish and handicapped people and people with AIDS and everything that you can possibly think of. But do you remember about a year ago? I don't know if it ended up happening, but one of the EPs of Family Guy basically said, we're not going to make gay jokes anymore. I don't know if this was actually put to test. And in effect, what they were saying was, okay, we're going to sort of buy into wokeness. And gay people, you should be treated a little differently than everyone else. Now, we could go back for 20 years of Family Guy and the literally 3,000 gay jokes around Stewie, a baby. I mean, right. Stewie's a baby. There's a great scene in Family Guy where they throw him back into Jesus's time. Jesus is taking a shower with porn music on and Stewie's standing there getting aroused. I mean, that's pretty intense stuff if you get right. offended by these type of things. So I don't know that they actually put that into practice in the last year of Family Guy. I haven't watched it in a while. But even the guys that are protected in a certain way, there is some other pressures where it would be really, really hard for a guy like you or a guy like me. We don't work for a studio. He still works for a studio. And that's not to say that we're impervious too, right? Because you have sponsors. I have sponsors. You have also personal, you know, your wife could get really pissed at you about something, or my mom could be really pissed at me, and we could shave right. off a little bit of what we really think. So I'm not sitting here saying we're perfect people, but I think that you're right that as the Hollywood system crumbles, it is shining a light on how many of those people were basically totally useless tools, and that there are other voices out there that are more interesting and more authentic, albeit not perfect.
Well, you know, as a former carpenter, if you're a good carpenter, you're never out of work. We just need you. That's how it works. I don't want to go back to carpentry, but I base a lot of my stuff on a skill and something tangible. I picked up a guy hitchhiking a million years ago when I was, you know, 25, just driving a truck and working as a carpenter. This guy looked a little down on his luck and thought I'd just give him a ride, you know, and he said he found out I was a carpenter. And then I said, what do you do? And he said, I'm a carpenter. And I said, what do you do? And he's like, I do rough. I do finish. I do drywall. I do foundation. I do concrete finishing. And I said, are you any good? And he said, yeah, I'm great at all of them. And then he said, I've been out of work for 6 months. And I thought, you're no good. You're no good at any of this. No way. When you're good Finnish carpenter, you're never out of work. Your dance card is full. Your calendar's full. And so what I don't think people understand, and this is kind of interesting, Hollywood is this way and sort of corporate America is this that way, which is we like the Duplass brothers, but we don't need the Duplass brothers. Yeah. And we like this mid-level executive guy over here, but we don't need him. We can just get some other mid-level, get call headhunter and get another whatever. And it turns out that a lot of people are kind of living in the middle. And when you're living in the middle, when the difference between you getting the part and that other person getting the part, or you getting your sitcom picked up by Netflix versus not, if it comes down to tenths of a second, then why are you screwing around praising Ben Shapiro? It could be just enough to get you on the wrong side of the paywall.
Yeah. Well, look, that's why for all the chaos that we live in right now, watching a lot of this stuff crumble, you know, I'm not a burn it down guy. And we're living in a time where it's a lot of literally in the town that we live in, it's a lot of burning it down. I would prefer that we look at the institutions we have and we figure out how to fix them. Now, they may be too far gone, right? Like the universities, mm-hmm. I would argue the universities at this point are too far gone. I would argue that the New York Times is too far gone. Our traditional media things like CNN, maybe they do deserve to burn. But it's very easy to burn everything down. It's a lot harder to build it up, right? I mean, a contractor, you can wreck a house a lot quicker than you can build a house, obviously. Speaking of which, I just moved last month. I decided to stay in this crazy town. I know Shapiro's getting out.
Yeah.
The Daily Wire guys are getting out. But I decided to stay because I thought, you know, if someone like me can't live in California anymore, if someone like me can't live in L.A., then really the experiment, as our friend Dennis Prager calls it, the American experiment's over. That if any decent person just is like, you know what, California is not a place that I can tolerate anymore, I got to go to Texas or I got to go to Florida, well, then the federalist system that we came up with is over. So I'm here. I'm gonna fight, and I'm going to try to convince you or Larry Elder or Prager to run for mayor. So let's do this, Corolla. What are you doing?
You moved out of the place in Sherman Oaks area.
I'm out of Sherman Oaks. I'm not going to say what part of town I'm in now, but I did move. And I can tell you, after moving, there's nothing better than a good contractor. There is nothing better than a good contractor who knows what they're doing, who's not bullshitting you, who is not, you know, just making you feel stupid because they're quoting you prices that are crazy and telling you need things that you don't need. You get a good contractor, you stick with that guy for the rest of your life.
Well, I'll get his number off the air. I'm interested in how you were shaped. So I come from a very liberal background. And so I felt very liberal, but I also had one eye open for what wasn't working. You know, so I was like, I get it. We're liberal and we're down with the indigenous people and we're all horrible slave owners. And I get all that. But on the other hand, there's some things you guys are doing that aren't working. And I like the liberal heart. I like the values, but I'm not so sure about the financial end of it. And I want to just kind of pick and choose. You know, I'd like to have liberal feelings about growing your own pot plant, or, you know, libertarian kind of feelings about whether you can, if you can marry your partner, marry a man, or things of that nature. But then there are other things I'm more conservative about because I've seen they're not really working for you people. And I'm not interested in taking shit that works and breaking it down. I have no, that's a waste of my time. I just want to pick and choose the stuff that's not really working and see if I can work it out. For instance, calling everyone a racist, that doesn't work for me. That seems insane and statistically impossible. And a wild coincidence. Everyone who disagrees with you is a racist? That's a wild coincidence.
Every single person who disagrees with me, Adam, is a Nazi. It's incredible. Right. I can't find anyone who disagrees with me who isn't a Nazi. That's pretty powerful stuff. But that goes to what you said about me at the beginning, because I remember when I was on the Young Turks that that's what it was. The argument of everything always came down to everybody else is a racist or a homophobe or a bigot or a Nazi. And when I started thinking about it, it wasn't that I had the answers yet, but just that thing, it kind of just sat there in front of me. And I was like, the math doesn't work on this. How could it be possible? It's not as if I'm looking around these people and I'm going, these are all the most ingenious, brilliant, evolved people ever. They're just people, good or bad or indifferent. And I'm just a person, good or bad or indifferent. How could it be possible that everyone we disagree with is such a goddamn fucking idiot and an evil person more than anything else? How could everyone else be so evil and us be so good? So once that equation, that math equation, 2 + 2 = 4. And if it doesn't, something's wrong. And I know they would prefer us not to believe that anymore because math is part of the patriarchy or something. But once I realized that, that was that sort of, I would say, was the high level thing that got me questioning all the other things. And then we've talked about it a million times when Larry Elder smacked me around about systemic racism and we aired the clip instead of not airing it. And I was on Aura TV at the time and the producers, they wanted to cut it. And I was like, if you cut it, then I don't even know what I'm doing for a career, because that was the real moment. So I can't, I'm going to have to take the hit. And I'm immensely glad that I made the right decision on that one. And, you know, it was my best moment probably and worst moment at the exact same time, which is a pretty rare thing, I suppose. But then I just started asking more and more questions. And the crazy part for me is that, you know, now Prager and Shapiro and Glenn Beck and a bunch of guys that 5 years ago I thought were all the bad guys, I know are the good guys. And I don't mean it to frame it in good guy versus bad guy as much as I have a couple of disagreements with them. I do. We know that's the case. Ben has a personal religious view on gay marriage. I am married to a dude. We've been together for 10 years, which for gay people in straight years, that's like 40 years together. We've been doing this thing. And we're happy and we're good and we're working on kids. I know Ben doesn't, in his worldview, his religious worldview, he doesn't feel that that's right. But he's not trying to legislate my life. And I would much rather live with someone in a world with someone like Ben than someone that wants to use my sexuality so that I have to, you know, bow to them all the time. And I know a lot of gays like being on their knees, but that just doesn't work for me anymore.
Well, let's talk about that. I'll tease it because I got a spot and a break. But this notion of, like, we need to use the gays, we need to use the blacks, we need to use the workers, we need to get them on our side. And my feeling is like, well, good. Then set up a bunch of programs that benefit them. No, we're not going to do that. We're going to agitate them and explain to them that the other side is gunning for them. That is a I say over and over again, it's almost 2021. Are we still going to keep playing this card as if the Klan is 66% of the population or the White Aryan Brotherhood or as if these groups really exist in any tangible numbers? Are you even, you know, I say to people all the time, like, all right, sorry, but like you can look at Nielsen ratings and demographics and everything else. I've been on a hit TV show. I've been on multiple hit TV shows. When you're on a hit TV show, you walk to an airport, people ask you for your autograph. They turn around. Those all the ratings you need is people stop you everywhere and they want to say something. Reality. That's how you know you're on a hit TV show. I say to people all the time, have you ever met a racist? Do you know racists? Do you know anyone in your family? Did you go to school with people who are like actively racist? If the answer is no, then there just can't be as many as CNN is talking about.
Well, that's why when they run around saying that Trump is a racist, like, you have to really think, well, what does that really mean? Now, Donald Trump, if you remember back to January before the pandemic, it feels like 1,000 years ago, Donald Trump was given the State of the Union thing address, and he talked about lowest all-time black unemployment. Everyone cheered except the Congressional Black Caucus and the progressives, who sat there arms folded looking like he just said, we're going to kill all of you and everyone you know. And it's like, well, so who is for black people? I mean, if Donald Trump is a racist, then you would clearly be able to point to something that would show that he wants laws to be put in place as the president of the United States that are going to harm people based on the color of their skin. or he's going to try to pass a law that is going to harm gay people because of their sexuality. Not only has he not done those things, but he was the first incoming first-time president to ever be pro-gay marriage. Barack Obama was not. So the progressives of 2030 are going to come down for Obama. And real quick, I'll tell you, I actually met Trump in December. It was about a week into impeachment. And, you know, everybody on MSNBC was saying the walls are closing in and right. He's freaking out and he's losing his mind, his inner circle. Well, I went out to dinner that night at Mar-a-Lago with Junior and Kimberly Guilfoyle is his girlfriend from Fox, and she's a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And David and I, my husband David and I, the four of us at dinner, we're at Mar-a-Lago. Mar-a-Lago has two rooms, basically. And it's very gaudy. It's very over the top. It's very Trump. It feels like Trump as a restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. The main room has, I don't know, maybe 50 people sitting there. And then there's a side room where there were maybe 20, 25 people. We were in the side room. We're sitting right there. And at the table next to us is Trump and Melania and Rudy Giuliani and two other people. We had a great dinner with Junior. I like him a lot. And at the end of the dinner, Junior says to me, "Hey, do you want to say hi to my dad?" So obviously I say yes. We walk up. Now, remember, this is literally a week into impeachment. The walls are closing in. He's freaking out. Trump's sitting there. He has no tie on, which is pretty weird to see him without a mm-hmm. tie. So he looks kind of relaxed because mm-hmm. he looks a little like a mafioso kind of the mm-hmm. collar is really open. His hair, you know, it was the end of the day. It hadn't been sprayed. So his hair mm-hmm. was like a little crazier, but he's laughing up a storm with Giuliani and Junior brings us over and Junior says, "Dad, I want you to meet Dave Rubin. He's got a great podcast, blah, blah, blah." And Trump looks at me. He's sitting, I'm standing. He looks up at me and he goes, "I recognize you. I recognize you." And I was like, "Oh, well, I'm on Tucker a lot on Fox." He goes, "Oh, that must be it." And then he turns to David, my husband. He turns to David. He goes, "Well, who are you?" And David goes, "Well, I'm his husband." And he goes, "Husband?" He slaps his hands on the table. He stands up. He goes, "I want to stand up and shake your hands. Thank you guys for coming out here." He goes, I want you to know I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit, and I don't think anyone else gives a shit, and I don't think anyone else has given a shit for 20 years. And then he points across the table. He goes, "Melania, can you believe it? These two guys are gay. Their only problem is they're too handsome." So then David walks around to Melania. They start talking. And I said, "Well, it's an honor to meet you, Mr. President." And I'm telling you, the way he looked at me, I could have said, "Yo, Don, what's up?" He the idea that I said, "It's an honor, Mr. President," like, that meant nothing to him, absolutely nothing. Anyway, then Junior got pulled away to another conversation, and the president and I had like a good like 8 or 10 minutes. And it was right when Bloomberg was about to get in, and we chatted about that for a little bit. And I'll just tell you one other thing about it. I told Trump my theory on Bloomberg, which was that I thought Bloomberg was a decoy the entire time. I thought they were always going to go coalesce around Biden, but they needed a little of the fire to be taken away because they realized how bad Biden was faltering. So they needed, remember those debates mm-hmm. where it was all about Bloomberg? Mm-hmm. And really that was just a decoy to just push Biden's old bones to the finish line. So that's what I said to Trump. And Trump puts his hand across the table onto Melania's hand. And he goes, honey, what do you think about this?" And then he had me repeat what I said. And I thought, that was an incredible moment. The way the media frames it, and every time you see a picture of them, it seems like they hate each other or that she hates him or something like that. But I said something that he thought was interesting, and his gut reaction before even responding to me was to put his hand on her hand and say, "Honey, what do you think about that?" And then we all talked about it. And I thought, that is so different than what you see through the media. That it was just another example, basically, of everything that we're always talking about. How the media is one thing, reality is something very different.
Well, I want to talk after the break, after the spot, about this sort of phenomenon of getting into everyone's heart. You know, we were talking about like African-American community, gay community, Hispanic community, women, and you go, "I don't care if your policies don't help us. I need to know you like us." You know what I mean? Which is like, right. I've never felt that way in my life, but I don't know why it's so pervasive now. Like you said, like, look, bring down black unemployment and the black community will thrive. Don't do anything about black unemployment, but love us and it won't make a damn difference. or respect us or whatever. It's all lip service. Anyway, I just want to know why, when we turn and why it's so important. All right, let me hit the LifeLock here. Since the start of the pandemic, there's been a 300% increase in cybercrime. Hackers are getting more sophisticated, taking advantage of teleconference accounts. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day we put our information at risk on the internet. Cyber criminals keep finding new ways to steal identities. You could miss certain threats if you're just monitoring your credit. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. It's almost 2021, as I now say. You need some insurance. You need to protect your identity. If they detect your information, they'll send you an alert. But you probably are going to be safe if you get LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can find out if your information is on the dark web. Get your free dark web scan at LifeLock.com/scan. Pick the plan that's right for you and save up to 25% off your first year with promo code Adam. That's a free scan at LifeLock.com/scan and 25% off with promo code Adam.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Right back with Dave Rubin right after this.
In the spirit of Murrow, Jennings, Cronkite, here's another great moment in local news.
Meet the Dewgarita. It's a margarita made with Mountain Dew. The cocktail is part of Red Lobster's new partnership with PepsiCo. The companies aren't divulging the exact recipe, but it's probably safe to assume the Dewgarita also contains tequila.
That's a great moment in local news. Now, back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Dave Rubin with us for the second half. Don't Burn This Book, the name of his very well-received, very good book. Think for Yourself in an Age of Unreason. And also our event, which is coming on tonight as you hear this. You can simulcast it live on YouTube, Facebook, and NoSafeSpaces.com, and that'll be at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. It'd be Dave and Dennis Prager and Ben Shapiro as well. So this feelings-based society that we're just kind of slipping into, like it's a coma or something, and I'm the one who keeps saying, I don't care about anyone's feelings. I want the roads paved. I want crime down. I want to do something about this homeless problems. And everyone looks at me and goes like, where's your empathy, man? And I go, I don't give a shit, man. I want to get the taxes down and get the schools reopened and get the test scores up. Like, when did this happen? It greatly affects the black community, for instance, because it's like, it's more important that the politician respect them than actually give them school choice, which would actually help the community. And I'm like, yeah, well, yes, go ahead.
Well, Adam, first off, paved roads sounds very empathetic to me. You know, true. My old place. I lived south of the boulevard. It was like driving through downtown Baghdad over there. I mean, it's just a nightmare of potholes and the rest of it. So paved roads, that's as empathetic as it gets, thank at least you. In Los Angeles. So when did it happen? You know, there's a lot of theories on this. Jordan Peterson has talked about this a lot. A whole bunch of scholars have talked about this a lot. So you can start tracing it back probably to 70s academia. But what I think is interesting that really gets to the heart of it is sort of why are there basically two prevailing positions? One is that you're either fact-based, in which case the media will frame you as very cold and very mean, and you care about all the wrong things, or your whole worldview is based on what you feel. So how did we really get to that? And I think there's a couple reasons. So a sort of simple version, like a political version, would be this. If you're somebody that's on the right, if you're a conservative or a libertarian or an old school liberal or something like that, you believe in really one thing more than anything else, which is individual rights. And that's what I know you believe, and it's certainly what I believe, and that what most people believe. There's individual rights. It doesn't matter if you're white or black. It doesn't matter if you're gay or straight. You got a limp, you're a lesbian, you got a poked out eye. It doesn't matter. You got the same laws applicable to you as everyone else in that society. The U.S. has done that better than any country in the history of the world. And when we've had periods of time where we didn't do it well, slavery, obviously, women not being able to vote, etc., we've rectified those things. So it doesn't mean that our history is perfect, but it means that it always expanded rights to more people. And if you were to tell me right now that there was a group of people based on an immutable characteristic that doesn't have equal rights, well, then I would fight for their rights. So equal rights is sort of the broadly the thing on the right that brings people together. I would also say that you, when you talk about like, I want roads that are okay, I want schools that are good, it's because I think, and this is very similar to how I feel, I think you probably consider yourself a realist more than anything else, in that the world, you view the world not as how you want it to be, but how it is. Now, that's very different than what the people on the left do. They don't view the world as it is. They only view it as they want it to be. And if you only view the world as you want it to be, you can basically destroy anything in the process to getting to that utopia. Now, of course, utopia doesn't exist. What you most likely will end up with is dystopia. But okay, so if you're on the right and you believe in individual rights, and that thus you believe in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the things that protect those rights, that's a unifying principle, which is why you and Prager, despite massive philosophical religious differences, I mean, basically you guys have a difference truly on what the nature of reality is at some level, right? Like this was the big Sam Harris, Jordan Peterson debate. You and Prager have a fundamental difference there, but you want to live in the same world.
Right.
So that's what people on the right believe because of individual rights. On the left, and I think this really does sum it up well, it is virtually impossible to figure out what the unifying principle of the left is other than government will fix it. So if you watch those Democratic debates, there was no talk of the individual or the Bill of Rights or the Constitution. Actually, the only time I remember the Constitution being mentioned in the Democratic debates was when they asked Joe Biden a question about doing a executive action on guns. And he said, well, it would have to be constitutional. And Kamala Harris laughed in his face and said, Joe, can't we just say, yes, we can? And right. It's like, Joe, poor Joe. I mean, he's got other problems now, but it's like, he's saying the word constitution to a group of people who don't care about it. So the problem is you've got on the right people that believe in individual rights. That is equality. That is true equality. On the left, you have people that believe that the government is supposed to solve everything. So when Bernie comes out there, right, and Bernie goes, all right, $15 minimum wage. Now, Bernie's never run a business. I'm more of a successful businessman than Bernie is. You're more of a successful businessman.
My gardener is a more successful businessman, literally, than Bernie is.
I could use a good gardener, by the way, so I'll have to get his number. Mm-hmm. But yes, that is true. Your gardener, I have no doubt, has probably created more jobs, because I'm guessing it's not just him or he works for somebody right. or something else and busts his butt. But the point is Bernie, who has never created a job, right? He's created campaigns that other people pay for, but Bernie's never created a job. He just picks the number $15. There's no economic meaning to that number. It just feels good to him. And it doesn't make sense because, as I'm sure you have, Adam, I have a zillion people always offering to work for me, and they always offer to work for free or intern for free, and I pay my interns because I do believe that you should pay people for work. But the idea that the government should come in and artificially tell me how much I should pay someone is crazy. But what happens is Bernie says $15 minimum wage. The media then frames that as, oh, Bernie wants to help poor people. They right. don't want to have the complex conversation about what that does to businesses and forcing you to pay for things that aren't worth that and everything else and how it'll raise prices. So now they framed Bernie as a good guy because he made up a number. But then it gets worse. And I think this gets to the heart of what you're asking. Then Rashida Tlaib comes along and she's, you know, one of the members of the squad there. She's a far left progressive. And she says $20 minimum wage. And then they go, well, Bernie said 15, but she said 20. And because they believe government is good, she is now more moral than they are. And what will happen next is someone will say 30, someone will say 50, and then there will be no businesses. And then there will be no one making any money. So I think the reason that your question basically was, why is it that some of us believe in facts? Why is it that some of us believe in feelings? How did the feelings thing basically eat the facts thing? And I think that is the answer. Individual rights is really the only thing that should matter, the only major thing that should matter in a free society. They have chosen to say that that is actually wrong and that what you feel about everything is right. And thus, Economics don't matter. Nothing matters. Philosophy doesn't matter. History doesn't matter, right? What is the 1619 Project by the New York Times? It's an erasure of history. And this is deeply dangerous stuff.
I agree, and I always try to approach things from a sort of psychodynamic sort of way. And I'm curious what you think about this thought, because it's something I've been noodling on for a while. So I come up with something in my head, and I keep thinking about it, and then I keep thinking about how it's affecting things. And I think this will dovetail nicely into the feelings versus numbers. I was talking to Dr. Drew about this the other day on one of my many walks and talks with Dr. Drew, which is money is invisible and it almost doesn't exist. So when Dr. Drew was a kid, his dad would say, "You think we got a money tree in the backyard? You think money grows on trees? You think there's a dollar bill growing on that tree?" So it was very tangible. It's like you want a pair of sporty tennis shoes, they're $40, and Dr. Drew's dad is saying, "We don't have a tree that grows money." So it was very, you know, I got paid by the hour my entire life until I got, you know, 31. I got into showbiz. I'd get $9 an hour, $7 an hour, and everything I did was based on hour. You know, mm-hmm. when I was 24, I was making $9 an hour. I'd order an Amstel Light at a bar. I'd be like, that's 1 hour's worth of work after taxes.
Yeah.
It's literally, I'd get $9 an hour. They take taxes out. You know, that Amstel Light is $6.50 plus tip, you know, like literally. And I was very careful. Now, my daughter has a phone and that phone has an app on it. And it says Uber Eats or whatever, whatever. And she just pushes a button. Now, here's where the disconnect comes. When I say to my daughter, as parents used to say to their kids historically, you go, "Do this." And they go, "Why should I do it?" And you go, "Because I said so, because I'm your dad." Now, and that was good enough because we understood that there was a direct connection between that person who said, "Because I say so," and a roof over your head and lights and power and hot water coming out of the spigot. And by the way, whatever food you ate that day didn't come from a magical device. It came from your dad's pocket. Your dad got paid $12 an hour. He works in a coal mine, came home dirty, and he had to wait for Friday for payday. So there was a very straight connection between money and relationships, things you want, stuff like that. Well, now money has become sort of digital and kind of invisible. And now that it's become invisible, people have sort of gotten into this world, and I see it with my own kids, and anybody living in modern times is going to feel this, which is my kids don't really connect me with the money. Mm-hmm. The money's on their phone. It's got nothing to do with me going on tour, going out of town, you know, coming in and doing podcasts or doing whatever it is, selling books, whatever it is I'm doing. It's kind of invisible. And now that the money's sort of free and invisible, then what do you owe this guy for? He's just taking up more space in her house. And it's a kind of AOC thing as well. She grew up in a digital, invisible kind of money world because the stuff she says is she's going, you know, healthcare for everybody, and we should have free schooling, and college should be free. Like, everything she said is based on money being invisible, not really being tangible. Nobody in the 60s, the 50s, even the 70s, where people literally opened their wallet and went, "I only have $18. Well, you owe $20. I got to go find $2 more somewhere." Like, you couldn't have made these proclamations in those times before Uber Eats and Starbucks delivers and every app on a phone and direct deposit and all that stuff where you really physically don't come in. We were growing up in a world where, you know, people had a Sparklets bottle filled with change. And, you know, at the end of the year, if it got full up, you could go to the arcade, you know, like that. That this kind of shit wouldn't fly. College should be free, or healthcare should be free, or everyone should have world class, you know, fill in the blank, unless money got invisible. As money gets more and more invisible, you can also start blaming, like, when is that fat cat going to start paying his fair dues? Like, his fair share. That guy pays for everything.
Right.
It's just invisible to you. You don't care.
Adam, I have a lot of memories, as I'm sure you do too, of the struggling years of stand-up when I had a freaking giant pretzel jar in my kitchen and I was just throwing change in there. And then I would get to that moment when I basically had no money and I was late on the rent and the whole thing. And I would go down to, I think it was Bank of America, and they had a free change machine. And if you happen to be the guy that got the thing, you might get an extra $5, something like that. And talk about real, talk about tangible and granular.
Your hand smelled like the money when you were done. That's how tangible it was.
Yeah.
Weird copper smell.
That smell of copper and just like every other person in New York City who touched all of that change. Yeah. Well, I think this is worth noodling on, because you're talking about the disconnect from reality to sort of just being able to do what you want whenever you want. You know, you mentioned AOC there. Let's not forget, this is a woman who said you don't have to be factually correct. You have to be morally right.
Right.
That is seriously dangerous for a politician to say that, because, well, first off, you do have to be factually correct. Facts are what lighten the world so that we can organize in a way that's sensible. But to say morally correct comes above that, well, I am fairly certain that I don't have the same moral compass as AOC, thank God. I'm pretty sure your moral compass is different than AOC. She thinks it's moral to take from people because she feels it is right. So you can basically excuse pretty much any behavior at that point.
By the way,
the disconnect thing and the digital thing is a really cool idea.
I just want to build on this. Sharia law is put in place by a bunch of people who really believe strongly in Sharia law. Shall we just respect it? You know what I mean? Like, everyone has beliefs. It doesn't mean they're all correct.
Chopping off your hand because you stole something to feed your starving family, it may not be factually correct, but right. It's morally right.
Right. Everyone has their own sort of constructs their own moral universe, but facts don't lie. That's an engineering thing, and that's why we have to all agree on it.
But by the way, that's why they're trying to take down facts. I mean, that's why they're trying to take down all of our universities. And the liberals, and it pains me to say this, but the liberals have no defense for this thing. This thing that is destroying everything right now, whether we're talking about statues being torn down or buildings being torn down or anything else. Look, we're both in LA. When the riots really started, I'm sure it was similar where you live to where I live, where suddenly there were blocks that were everything was boarded up and it said Black Lives Matter on the outside. And if you're not really thinking about it, you could walk down that street and be like, boy, there's an awful lot of support for Black Lives Matter here because all the buildings say Black Lives Matter. But if you think about it for 1 second past that, you go, oh, wait a minute. It's not that they support Black Lives Matter. It's that this is a protection racket. That the only way their store is not going to be destroyed, although in many cases their stores were destroyed anyway, is if they acquiesce to their demands and say Black Lives Matter. So they're basically acting as a mafia group, but it's worse than a mafia group. At least the mafia has good food and some funny people, and you know, they care about family and hard work. These guys are mafia with none of the good stuff.
The school you're bringing up, the college campuses, as I was sort of really drilling down on the invisible money, the folks that are living in a kind of invisible money world is college professors. Once you make tenure, then you're just going to get paid what you get paid in perpetuity. You're not going to get fired. You're not going to have to, you know, make ends meet or work the third shift or take a summer job. And you're kind of living in a world as close as we can get to sort of socialism and then kind of invisible money. You're not going to be rich. You'll never be poor. You'll be, you know, sort of upper middle. And you are then instructing all our kids coming from a position of being a recipient of sort of invisible money versus having a small business owner instruct our kids, and you could only imagine how different some of those lessons would be, or Mike Rowe, or anybody, or you, or me. You can imagine what we'd be espousing versus what someone who is living in that world. So in a way, the kids, many of the kids, are there with the invisible money. You know, they have a credit card. Their parents pay the tab at the end of the month. I'm not saying some kids, you know, don't work and don't whatever, but many of them at the elite schools are just there. They're just there, everything's taken care of, invisible money, and then they're being taught by people that are living under the umbrella of invisible money. So how is reality going to seep into this group?
Well, I think the proof's in the pudding. What I like about this theory is it fits with the rest of the stuff that we talk about, because why are the universities crumbling first? The whole point of the No Safe Spaces movie, actually, which is why we're doing CancelCon tonight, the whole purpose of it was to say something so rotten is happening here. And what was the criticism that we all got 3 years ago when we were all talking about this? I'm sure you got the same thing. I got it all the time. Ruben, you're just talking to, it's just happening on college campuses. The second they hit the real world, they'll realize what's going on and it won't be there. And I kept saying, this thing is so rotten, it's so evil, it's so twisted, it's so all-encompassing that simply is not the truth. Well, it's fairly obvious that we were proven right. But what better place for horrible ideas to take root other than universities, where we know that something like 90% of college professors are on the left, places where they get tenure so then they don't really have to work, where they can talk about theories all day instead of reality. And what I would say is, if you're a parent and you're watching this and you got a young kid that you're thinking of maybe sending to college or that you've already started saving money for college, you can learn an awful lot on YouTube right now. And that's not to say that the 4-year experience and being on your own and living with a group of people before you live with your spouse or all that stuff's good, or experimenting with drugs or whatever it is. I'm not saying that stuff, none of that's good, because I think there's value in that too. But if you're going to walk out of that thing $150,000 into debt, well, that's no good. I went to SUNY Binghamton, which is a state university in New York school. It's one of the better state schools that we've got in New York. And I wanted to go to Syracuse because I wanted to be a broadcaster. And that's where Bob Costas went and Marv Albert and all the big broadcasters went there. And I thought I'd be like a sports center anchor or something. And my dad said to me, we looked at the numbers. He showed me at that time, Syracuse was about $25,000 a year. Now it's something like, it's literally something like $60,000 a year. And Binghamton, if you were an in-state student, I think it was about $8,000. And then he was going to throw in another $2,000 for living expenses. And my dad said, look, I'll pay for this one and you're good to go. Go have, enjoy yourself. But I'm not paying for that one. And he said, the choice is yours. And I went to Binghamton. And I think that's sort of, we're watching the entire system collapse, overpriced private schools, now state schools that are crumbling under the weight of their own, of the ideas that they promulgated in the first place.
You know, it's funny as you mentioned Syracuse. So I grew up out here in the San Fernando Valley. I never went to college and I was so uneducated geographically. I didn't know where Syracuse was. I didn't know, like when I'd watch game shows and they'd go from, Bob Barker's clothes provided by Botany 500 from New York, New York City or something. I'd go, why are they saying New York, New York? Like, why are they saying New York two times? I don't know what that is.
I was just a stutter.
I had no idea the difference between, Washington, D.C. and Seattle, Washington. I literally didn't. And then later on in my career, when Drew and I had a popular show on MTV, we started playing all these college campuses. And, Drew would go, we're going to Syracuse this week. I'd go, is that in San Diego? Is that in Palm Springs? Like, I don't know where Syracuse is. And I knew the football teams. I didn't know where they were. I knew Notre Dame, but I didn't know where Notre Dame was. And so we found ourselves at Syracuse. And we got up on stage, 2,000-3,000 seat auditorium. We'd sell out these things all the time. And we just started getting on our spiel. And I think somebody asked a question like, well, what about getting a degree in communications? And we had no, we didn't know what the hell Syracuse specialized in. And Drew did 5 minutes on, it's a waste of time. Go to work at a radio station. It's free. You go there, you intern, it's free. We worked with the K-Rock ever had a degree. No one cared about your degree. It's a waste of money. And I could feel the air coming out of the room as Drew was just going on and on, just waxed about what a waste of time a communications degree was, because he would have said that in Arizona State, but that wasn't what they were known for.
Yeah, that is their thing at Syracuse.
Well, we found out when he was done giving it's as worthless as the paper it's written on kind of thing. When we were done, it was pretty clear as we were looking around to these like stunned faces of people that were in their third year over there, $80,000 into their communications degree, that
Right.
It was
basically the worst weather in the country up there, too. It's like, Jesus, you know, you thought it was in San Diego. At least you give them a useless degree in San Diego. You're having fun. You look good.
The only thing I remember about that is that speech, and Drew and I, with a couple hours to kill before the gig, took a walk and realized that there's a giant cemetery that's right next to the campus. And we just walked all the way through this campus, almost a campus cemetery. So, yeah, ideas. And I know, like, there's a very interesting clip of President Obama. It's from a debate, Max Zapata. We won't find it, but you can look it up. But he's doing a debate, and the moderator is asking him about raising corporate taxes. And so the moderator, he goes, well, you want to raise corporate taxes, right? And he goes, probably capital gains. He goes, you want to raise capital gains? And he goes, yeah, I do. And then the moderator goes, you know, every time they raise capital gains, they get less money because mm-hmm. people don't sell things, or they get smart, or they do whatever they do. Yep. So actually raising of the capital gains tax actually gets you less money. So with that in mind, why would you want to do it? And he was like, because I want to do what's fair. And it's like, but don't you want the moderator kept with it. And he was like, but don't you want more money? And he's like, I don't know. It doesn't always work that way. And the moderator's like, no, it always works that way. Whenever they raise it, you get less because people give less. And he's like, I'll just raise it a bit. You know, and I thought, he would look at raising capital gains tax for purpose of fairness. For the purpose of fairness. Like, okay.
The purpose of fairness.
But so even if you make less, yes, I'd like to be fair. That's
Adam.
Yes.
He wanted to be morally right, factually correct.
That is right. A good note to go out on CancelCon. That'll be simulcasting live tonight on YouTube, Facebook, NoSafeSpaces.com. And, of course, I'll be there with Dave and Ben and Dennis, and we'll be talking about everything. The YouTube channel, The Rubin Report, I've been on it. It's great. God bless you. I smile every time I think about you, Dave Rubin. And obviously, the book, Don't Burn This Book, as well. I will.
Hey, Corolla, yes. I need to get you out here. I think I got an air conditioning return that's a little too small. I feel like you're the guy that could come over here and fix this thing. Can you get out here this afternoon?
I'm an HVAC man, and I can help you. And I will come by and look at whatever you got, because that's my
passion.
A
door that's sticking. I can keep you busy for a couple hours.
That I'll fix. $20 minimum wage, as so says the squad. Thanks, Dave. I'll see you soon.
Adam.
First, Geico. Right now, Geico's offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. That's 15% on top of the money you could save already if you're going with Geico. There's never been a better time to switch and save at Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. That's geico.com. All right, Tempe, Arizona, this weekend at the Improv. That's coming up the 18th and the 19th. Two shows, two pods, and then two stand-up shows. John Holmberg going to be on Friday, and then Rob Schneider on Saturday. That's for the podcast, and then live stand-up after that. Salt Lake City Wise Guys coming up on the 2nd and 3rd after that. Just go to AdamCarolla.com, check out the YouTube page, and I'm your emotional support animal. Grab that book, write a review. I will read it and tell. Next time, it's Adam Carolla for Dave Rubin and Gina Grad and Paul Bryan. Say it. Mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Be sure and pick up Adam's book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. It's available everywhere. Get the links at AdamCarolla.com.